Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Ink Group. My returning guests tonight are Nick Capasso, Museum Director of the Fitchburg Art Museum, and Kent Russell, CEO and Curator at the Museum of Russian Icons in Clinton. And we're continuing our conversation about how museums are surviving COVID. Nick, Kent, welcome to the show again. It's a pleasure to talk. I guess it's a pleasure to talk to you. That's like a weird thing to say in these days. It's as much pleasure as I can possibly muster at the moment to talk to you both.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to talk.
You know, you're right. It's that basic. Let's get some basics out of the way first. I went to both your websites. Are you both your institutions going to open on February 4th and 5th?
Well, the Museum of Russian Icons will open if the governor allows the reopening of institutions. You know, it's such a volatile situation. We don't know.
Right? Okay, I don't want to say anything, but I just heard from my wife that they're not changing any of the protocols right now.
Right.
They just announced it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it'll be impossible for us to open with the existing protocols. The numbers are so small, it's very difficult to manage it.
Oh, wow. Nick?
Yeah, we voluntarily closed.
You sent out a message yesterday.
Yeah, well, we had voluntarily closed back in November because of a super spreader event in Fitchburg that made things very dangerous. And we had hoped to reopen on February 3rd, and we just decided that that's not viable. Fitchburg has been in the red, as they say in Massachusetts, now for 10 weeks.
Jesus.
The transmission rate is like 11.5%.
Whoa.
It's just, and half of my staff is over 60 or in some other high-risk group. So it's just not worth being open right now, especially with all the other spread in the community. We can have one less point of contact.
Yeah, I got it.
That's a good thing.
Kent, are you in the same situation as Nick is as far as your staff being over 60 and therefore very vulnerable?
No. I have to admit I'm probably the oldest person on the staff. You know, we range from later 20s through mid 40s. So we have a relatively young staff. It's mostly our visitors who are elderly.
Right. That's right.
The demographic is such that they're the vulnerable ones.
Well, how's Clinton overall doing for COVID? I mean, is it like Fitchburg?
It's not quite as bad as Fitchburg, you know, but they have a rolling opening for the schools, and some weeks the schools are closed. It's a mess. It's a mess across the nation, and it's a catastrophe here in central Massachusetts. Let's just face it. It's a disorganized situation, and we're all suffering from it.
I know. I had a phone meeting with my physician last week, and basically he couldn't tell me. I have pre-existing conditions, two of them, and I'm over 65. So I said, like, when can I get in line? He said,
yeah, where's your vaccine?
Right. He said, we have no idea.
Yep. Well, if you go on the Mass government site, there is information about first responders and this first wave, but nothing about the protocols for the next several waves of vaccination. It's ridiculous.
I have to say, for both of you, I have just been feeling this for both of you. I mean, you must be going through hell.
Nick? I feel a lot worse for my community. I mean, you know, we're very, very fortunate in that even with all this closure, we haven't had to lay anybody off. We're still paying our frontline hourly people. And we'll be able to do that through the fiscal year, which is great. And you know, the other thing is, if people can't come to the Fitchburg Art Museum for a couple of months, so what?
Whoa!
Well, really, I mean, you know, we've got serious problems.
Yeah, we do.
And, you know, like most museums, we're generating all kinds of online content, which has been great. But I'm much more worried about, you know, a poor city that is now a very sick city.
Yeah.
So what we've been doing while we've been closed is we were challenged by one of our major funders to help with pandemic relief in the city. So the Fitchburg Art Museum is now feeding people.
Wow.
Because that's what it's come down to. You know, our funder, it's a private family foundation called the Cathedral Fund. And they've given us a major grant for programs to serve underserved audiences. And I met with the foundation director in December, and she said to me, "So how are things in Fitchburg?" And I told her, and she said, "So what are you doing about it?" And I said, "Well, you know, we're doing online content, and we helped create a local artist pandemic relief fund, and we're distributing free art supplies to families who are, you know, sheltering at home." And she looked at me and she said, "Kids can't eat crayons."
Whoa.
Wow.
And she said, "You know, if you're going to identify yourself as a community-oriented museum in times of crisis, you have to stretch your mission." So this foundation provided us with a $50,000 grant for food relief for kids in the Fitchburg public schools.
So how does that manifest itself? You're not handing out the meals at the museum.
Oh, well, what we're doing is on 6 Saturdays through the winter, and we've already done 2 of them, we're doing drive-by and walk-up events at the museum where we're handing out each time 250 packages of foodstuffs, you know, non-perishable.
Yep.
And we're also augmenting that with education supplies and hygiene products and gift cards for local grocery stores. And it's been great because we've been able to use this program to leverage donations.
Yes.
On top of this. So we're just handing out stuff that people need. And every Saturday we've done this. It's all disappeared in 2 hours.
Wow. Kent, you're in a different situation because you're a specific kind of museum.
When we have a different position in our community to the Fitchburg Art Museum. And the Fitchburg Art Museum is a venerable, well-established institution in Fitchburg and highly regarded and integrated into the community as a result largely of what Nick has been doing. And so they're fulfilling this extraordinary role, which is probably a national model, to be quite honest, where a museum fully understands its responsibility to its community beyond, as Nick just said, beyond pencils and crayons. In our case, Clinton has a different economic demographic to Fitchburg. You know, it's a working class town. There's social services are able to more or less keep up with the needs of the people, and there are a number of small organizations such as WEAT that are looking after the delivery of essential things such as food and clothing to those in need. And so the museum participated in a kids' toy collection program, but I can't claim to be anywhere near close to the extraordinary commitment to the community that the Fitchburg Art Museum has made.
Well, and also I want to underscore too, Kent and Mark, that we didn't do this by ourselves. We did this because we've part of our position in the community is that we have lots of partnerships and trusted relationships with other organizations. So what we were able to do was to mobilize other groups to help us do this. We could not have done this by ourselves.
And it also helped that you had a financial, essentially, grant to do this.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
We basically worked with a group, a volunteer group called Inform Fitchburg, which is, it's basically a parent group that helps the public schools.
Nice. Okay, great.
And over the summer, they had done a couple of food and supply distribution events. But they were doing it, you know, they didn't have any logistical support.
Got it.
They didn't have any money. You know, they weren't able to they were only able to give away what they could scrounge as in-kind gifts.
Oh, wow.
And what we've been able to do for them is provide a site and a place where, you know, everything can be collated and delivered, and we can help them mobilize volunteers, and we can give them money so you can put together a bag of supplies that makes sense. You know, you can put together a bag of supplies that's got five meals for a family of four in it.
What's happening with school attendance in physical school attendance in both your cities or towns? And Kent, why don't you start? Are Clinton schools like back at school, or are they working from home?
No, it's all a hybrid. And,
okay.
You know, that's a hardship for members of the staff who have kids in the in public schools. So, you know, our form of support in this moment is similar to the Fitchburg Art Museum, is that we're maintaining our full staff on payroll, including the hourly wage earners, at the level that was before the pandemic. And we're also working on a rotation through the building and remotely. So we never have more than four people in the building at any time. And so most people are working, let's say, two or so days from home and maybe three at the museum, and then very flexible if they have childcare issues. So that's, you know, it's complicated. We're all, you know, this has an enormous financial financial issue for all of us.
Like, Nick, are the Fitchburg schools closed?
The Fitchburg school, they have been trying to launch a hybrid model since September, and because of the virus, they haven't been able to get any of the kids in the schools. They've been doing remote the whole year with no end in sight, and attendance is a big problem, but the larger problems that they're having with their kids are food security, housing security, and mental health security.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, attendance and learning are not even on their to-do list right now. You know, in normal times when we're not having a pandemic, the Fitchburg Public Schools are responsible for 30% of the city's food security.
Wow.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So it's just, you know, it's a nightmare. And I've told him this, our school superintendent, Robert Jokola, who's also on our board. I've said to him, Bob, you're the guy whose job I would least like to have right now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he explains to me that on the one hand, he has the teachers union screaming at him that no one should be at school. And on the other hand, simultaneously, he has parents and a lot of single parents screaming at him that if he doesn't open the schools, they're going to have to stay home with their kids, and they're going to lose their jobs, and they're going to be homeless.
Right. Have both of you finally had it for people not wearing masks?
Oh, yeah.
Don't even get me started.
I had a conversation with somebody without a mask that it was as friendly as I could make it. But I pointed out that, you know, I'm not wearing this mask because I'm frightened. I'm wearing it for you, and you're not reciprocating.
Yeah.
Well, look what happened in our nation's capital during the event.
Oh, my God. You know, what I've been telling people is, you know, somehow I manage to put my pants on every day.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not because I love pants.
No, it's infringing on your freedom to not wear pants.
Right.
Particularly now.
But, you know, I mean
a lot of people do Zoom meetings just with the upper bit clothes, you know.
I have stories. I have stories. There's been some bad incidences that my wife Sheila has been some holding meetings, and it wasn't until and then I guess people don't understand that they're still on camera when they're not talking, and therefore when they stand up to like move around, it gets weird. It gets very, very weird. So, okay, getting serious, guys. I feel the same way. I didn't think I was going to be here by this time. I still didn't think I was going to be hunkering down and sheltering in place and the whole thing. Last fall, I thought, and then just as predicted, Thanksgiving and Christmas, people did stupid things. And and now it's I don't know about you personally, but it's now gotten to the point where I know people who have died.
I know several people who
have died. That's what I'm saying. It's starting to get so it's I feel like it's closing in. And you have to be closer. But there has to be a semblance of a light at the end of the tunnel because of the vaccines. But the rollout is not going to be quick. So but hopefully with the new administration, hopefully like say by May, a lot of people are going to have vaccinated. I want to start with you, Kent. How are you going to finally, what's going to determine when you can finally just open up?
I'm going to follow the either the state or the federal mandate.
Okay.
Particularly, I think, with the new administration coming in and their apparent commitment to a leadership role of the federal government in all of this. And I think what's happening is a complete lack of a centralized coordination in response to this pandemic. And the pandemic is national. It's not state.
No.
It's not city. It's national. And it requires a national coordinated response. And once that's in place, I think we're going to see significant movement forward. What is going to happen? I have no idea. I suspect that we are in this through the summer. And once we get vaccinated, until there's a sufficient amount of people being vaccinated, we still have to wear masks, which probably means that if we do reopen, we still have to have pre-booking, limited numbers, and this extraordinarily diminished earned income situation. And, you know, you wonder how many institutions are going to survive this.
Nick, I assume you're going to wait till the state guidelines say it's okay. But
yeah, I mean, we were certainly going to follow whatever guidelines are issued, but we also have to watch the local numbers. You know? I mean, like I said before, we closed voluntarily. Nobody told us to do it. We didn't have to. But in our community, it just became too dangerous. And so, you know, if the governor says, hey, you can open back up, but, you know, Fitchburg's got a transmission rate of 10%, that's not going to happen.
No, that's understandable.
It just can't.
I'm wondering if people are going to issue some kind of identification to declare that you've had your vaccinations, because I can see people obviously lying and go, yeah, I've had my vaccinations. And not.
Well, they're not even sure that people who are vaccinated can't spread the disease.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. That's why the masks are going to remain a problem for
for a long time.
For a long time. So we're going to have to insist on masks in our building and with our staff, which hasn't been a problem at all. Luckily, the staff are 100% behind all the protocol.
For the time we were open from the end of July until the middle of November, our visitors were very good too.
Yeah,
you know, we had to remind a few of them, but we didn't have a fight with anybody.
You didn't have somebody like that Colorado senator who refused to leave her gun behind.
There were a couple of people who showed up without masks, and they didn't want to wear one. And what we did is we gave them a free pass and said, well, when you can come back, when you don't have to wear a mask, you can come for free because you couldn't come today.
Yeah.
And they went away happy.
That's a very nice way of doing it. I'm going to imitate you, Nick.
We're trying at the same time to be compassionate. I mean,
why bother?
Everybody.
It's like...
Everybody is stressed to the limit.
I know.
Freaked out.
I know. I've never been through such an extended period of freak out in my life.
Yeah, it's a lot of freak out. I mean, between the pandemic and the politics, it's just.
I know. It's like a perfect storm of emotional.
Functioning nervous system.
I know. Let me ask you both separately an important question. Having gone through this, how is this going to change how you manage your museum in the future? Kent, why didn't you start?
We're committed to the virtual programming 100%. We're getting audiences, even as they slow down a little bit, and all of us have noticed that they're not quite what they were maybe two months ago. But we're fully committed to that form of outreach, the virtual programming, because we can get larger audiences, more diverse and international in its scope, and that's wonderful for us. So we're going to rebuild our budget to invest more in that aspect of what we do, and still continue on-site programming, but change it so that we can really deploy probably more than half of those education resources to online programming.
That's really interesting. What about having a preparation plan for the next infectious disease?
Well, we have one. We I'm sure all of us do in the museum. We sort of hybridized a whole load of different plans. So we have, you know, our protocols in place, what to do if somebody gets sick on the staff, what to do if somebody is
okay.
positive, and contact tracing.
So that just is going to stay with you and is going to be on the books. And so the next time anything similar to this happens, you can just go.
Unlike the Trump administration, we are not going to throw that out.
Nick, I want to ask you the same question.
Yeah, and well, we're in exactly the same situation. There is some online content that we will continue. There's some we'll probably do a little less of, but we are going to have a stronger online content presence. We're going to keep all our protocols in place for next time. And the other thing that we're doing is, you know, the other thing that's come along with this horrible year is the increased focus on racial equity.
Yep.
Especially in the nonprofit sector. So, you know, at the Fitchburg Art Museum, we've done a lot of that work, but a lot of that work has been external, you know, in terms of audience development and mm-hmm. partnerships and becoming a bilingual museum and doing programming for the Latino community and things like that. What we're spending time now doing is really starting to dig in on the internal work.
What does that mean?
So,
Translate that for me.
It's a couple of things. It's creating actual written policy around racial justice.
Got it. Yep.
And it's also about hiring practices, and it's about diversifying the board. So this past December, for the first time, we brought two members of the Latino community onto our board of trustees.
Fantastic.
And we're going to continue that work because we're still not as diverse as we need to be.
Now, when you talk about diversity, are you talking about a targeted diversity like the Latino community, or all around diversity, which could mean handicapped?
Right. I think so. I have two answers to that. I think the top priority for us is the Latino community because you're located. Right. You want to have a board that reflects the people you serve, and 35% of the people in Fitchburg, are from Latin America. So there's that. And then the other part of it, and the more of the internal work we're going to do, is to create a racial equity working group that is going to look at, you know, all the aspects of our operation and figure out how we can, create equity and inclusion in every aspect of our practice. And also the other thing that museums have got to start thinking about is the whole decolonization thing, right? We have a large collection of African art.
Oh, I know.
And it's something we have to take a good hard look at. You know, since I've been there, the only things that have come into the collection are properly documented and bought and sold and have all their paperwork and all their approvals. But before I got there, I'm not quite sure how a lot of those things showed up.
So you're going to have to look into how the objects were obtained.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is actually a decades-old problem. A decades-old problem for art museums. Because, even with the Elgin marbles and stuff like that, I mean, there have been things about repatriating them. So this has been a long discussion that just keeps getting swept underneath the rug. But I think it's going to be...
But the other thing that gets swept underneath the rug with it is that museums in America are instruments of white supremacy.
Sure.
You know, sorry to say it, but... And not in every aspect of their practice, but in a lot.
And Kent, you don't face the same problems because you've got you had a single person who bought the objects, and then you've acquired them since then.
Yeah,
you don't have that same kind of history.
No, we don't. And of course, because we don't have a diversity of collections, I mean, they are primarily Russian icons. I mean, our biggest issue is similar to the handling of Native American sacred artifacts. The issue of how do you treat intrinsically sacred objects to a certain group of people with the respect that those people expect those objects to be treated with. So, you know, we're careful about that with the Orthodox community.
Absolutely.
And so far, so good. But, you know,
Ken, do you have any issues in your field about having to repatriate icons to churches from which they were stolen or looted?
Well,
hey guys, we're completely out of time.
No.
Yeah, my returning guests tonight are Nick Apasso, Museum Director of the Fitchburg Art Museum, Kent Russell, CEO and Curator at the Museum of Russian Icons Clinton. We have been following both of them for months through the COVID, and it's been interesting. It's been really interesting. So let's plan on doing this again at the beginning of April.
Thank you. Sounds great.
Yeah.
I just appreciate you guys coming down. And my heart goes out to both of you. It sounds like you've learned a lot of interesting things that you're applying. And I just hope that we can get through this and we're all out on the other side. We can throw one big, huge museum party.
We're going to do that.
We'll all be there. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.